Welcome to another special episode of BulaNetwork.com. Well, actually, I'm rebranding this to Inside the Yellow Studio, but that's kind of hard to do since I'm obviously not recording inside the Yellow Studio. This has been an odd week. I've been meeting and talking with folks and toting my, well, I don't know how portable a microphone it is, but toting my microphone with me and recording at will. Do me a favor, go over to iTunes, please. Leave me a review. It'll help us gain some visibility, hopefully spread the news. We're going to rebrand to Inside the Yellow Studio and try to get a little more targeted and specific. Hopefully, I will be, the next episode, I'll be back inside the Yellow Studio and all will be well. Here's what's on my mind. When good enough is no longer good enough, usually we hear that phrase and we hear it in the context of content creation or product creation. It could be software, it could be anything else. A lot of folks are very familiar with and fans of, and I admit I am as well, a guy by the name of Eric Ries, and there are others who are part of the lean startup movement. The premise behind that, for those of you that might not be familiar, is to produce something good enough, get it out there, get feedback, iterate the thing, pivot the thing, morph the thing, whatever, pick your favorite term, and make it better. Don't get hung up in trying to create it perfect. Now that's, you know, that's a 15-second synopsis of something that is far more complicated than that, but you get the idea. So when we say good is good enough, we typically mean, okay, your blog post, your podcast, your video. It's usually some piece of content. It could be a product. It could be an ebook. Your ebook is good enough. It could be a header graphic design for your website. Well, that's good enough. It could be the entire website design. Well, that's good enough. So we're very fond of that kind of terminology. And I freely confess it has its place. Most notably, it has its place among those of us that might be perfectionists, those of us that might want to obsess about every little thing. And until we get it just so-so, we don't want anybody else to see it. I'm a big fan of the power of editing. I know that seems quite ironic because here as an audio producer and a video producer, I have gone on record and I will repeat it here. I don't edit. There's one big reason why I don't. I'm not saying that I shouldn't edit. I'm confessing to you I don't edit. I probably should edit. But I don't because I'm too lazy. I don't want to go to the trouble. And I do subscribe to the good enough notion in that, okay, if I say or pause too long or don't pause enough, who cares? Well, you might care. So it's a big deal. Well, okay, it's clearly not a big enough deal because I don't do it. If I believed that it would make a world of difference, I would do it. There's the rub. True story. Conversation. Guy's got a design for I. A design for I? Did I just say that? See, the power of the edit. I should edit that out, but I'm not going to do it. He has an eye for design. Man. Been a long week. We're looking at something and he's obsessing about the squared corners. The corners are square. Wouldn't it look so much better if those were rounded? Why didn't they round those corners? And of course I started laughing and he's right. It's not a matter of course it's subjective, but in my opinion, he was right. Do me a favor, go over to the website, go to Bula, B-U-L-A network.com. That's my website. On the right-hand side, you'll see an example of what I'm talking about. That opt-in box where you plug in your name and email, okay, while you're there, go ahead and do that too. That box, you'll notice, has squared corners. You see the box right below that? Well, actually, it's a graphic. It's a subscribe by way of iTunes graphic. Has the iTunes logo in it. See those corners? They're rounded. Okay, if you're on a treadmill or you're driving, don't worry about it. But when you get back to a computer, go to BulaNetwork.com. Just look over in the right-hand corner. Look at the top thing and look at the thing right below it. Squared corners, rounded corners. Now, my friend would probably obsess because they're not the same. The top box, squared corners. The box right below it, rounded corners. Make them both the same. He would say make them both round. Here's the rub. How much difference would that make? True story, another one. When I began to sell hi-fi gear, high-end wire was really, it was not nearly the business that it is today. This is long before you had heard of a brand called Monster Cable. In fact, Monster Cable had yet to be birthed. I remember us getting in some high-end, we thought it was high-end. Well, we thought any time you change the cables out in a tone arm, yeah, this is back in the vinyl days. You know how long a tone arm is, even if you don't own one or have never had one in real life, you've seen photographs. I mean, you're not talking about wire that's very long. Well, the wire inside that tone arm, we got some company sent us some samples to try that was an upgrade of factory wiring in these tone arms. I don't remember the price, but you know, any price we would have thought, well, that's crazy. I mean, people are going to replace the wire in their tone arm. I remember us spending hours and hours in sound rooms, listening to records, listening, setting up a table, two identical tables, one with that wiring, one with the regular factory wiring, trying our best to hear the difference. And whether it was psychoacoustic or whether it was real, I don't know. But on some records, you might hear one of us say, yeah, I think I can kind of hear a different, you know, and that's kind of how the conversations went. Well, for us, being just young guys that didn't have all the money in the world, we're like, it's got to be a more substantial difference than that. I mean, this just isn't making near enough of an improvement to justify the cost, not for us. Now, for the customer who would come into the store and just say, I want the best, give me the very best, because that was their deal, great. Great. We've got this. We got some tone arm wire that you definitely need to invest in. Yeah, there's a lot of things in the world that are like that. The return is just very incremental for the investment that's required, whether that investment is time or money or effort or pick something. When good enough is no longer good enough, I want to take that and I want to apply that in a different area. I firmly believe that, yes, taking action at a level that's good enough is far better than not taking action until you get everything just so-so. In the retail business, a business that I spent the bulk of my life in, I would often have conversations with people inside and outside my company and tell people, you know, especially people that were slow to pull the trigger on things. And some people just are. Some people are just, they just can't, they're just not that decisive. Well, I was always very decisive, and I learned very early on in business, speed kills. Speed kills, and it can kill in two ways. It can kill you because you act too fast, but if you can do it properly, boy, you can really kill the competition. So when it came to, say, a merchandising decision, here's an opportunity, I would weigh the pluses and minuses. I'd make a decision. I'd move on when other people would just agonize and agonize and agonize. And I would regularly tell some of these folks, by the time you've made your first decision, I'll be on my third or fourth. And when faced side by side, which of those do you think is going to be the better decision? So I make a decision, tweak it, change it, adapt, make another decision, tweak it, adapt, adjust, make another decision. Have you seen any of these shooting shows? I don't watch them very often, but I know there's a show, there's some kind of a reality show that takes you know, some of the best shooters on the planet and pits them against each other, Top Shot or something like that. I don't do any of that sort of stuff. I never have. It's intriguing to me. But what's notable is, say, a sniper, a guy that's shooting a long range target, and he's got a spotter, and that spotter's looking through, you know, some telescope type thing, and he takes a shot. Now, the spotter is looking for where that shot landed, and he's going to call out to the shooter, you know, an inch to the left, and whatever. He's gonna call out the adjustment that needs to be made by telling that shooter where his shot landed. You know, you're an inch to the right. Now, they talk in more precise language than that, but you get the drift. Now, that shooter has got some choices to make. He can ignore that feedback and just decide, nah, I know what I'm doing. He can listen to the feedback, but decide he's not going to do anything with it. Or he can listen to what the spotter says, and he can adjust his scope and whatever else he has to adjust so that his next shot will be more accurate. I think there's a big benefit in that when it comes to us taking action. We can take some action, we can get some feedback, and keep in mind, no feedback is feedback, and we can make adjustments along the way. Now, I want to take this whole notion of good being good enough, and I want to apply it to a different area, because this is something that I've noticed. I don't know how new it is. You know, it's pretty common for all of us to recognize that there are business owners who really all they did is they just bought themselves a job. We know some business owners, we may know some solopreneurs that, you know, if they would just close up shop and go get a job, even in this economy, they could go get a job and make more money. But for whatever reason, they don't do it. They don't want to do it. That's fine. That's their choice. I'm not talking so much about that, but I'm talking about when good is no longer good enough because an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, a small business owner has been operating for a number of years at a level that is good enough that they can continue, they can keep their doors open, whether they have doors or not, but you get the drift, and they just keep on. But they never can quite break through. They never are able to really get to the next level. And I've noticed something. On one hand, it's a mystery, and on the other hand, it's not. It's a mystery in that I don't understand why people grow so lethargic and, I guess, beaten down that they don't want to fight any harder, because it seems to me that it would be much harder to fight the way many of them are fighting, to just keep on keeping on, than it would be to fight maybe in a different way, to just push through. For instance, there are business owners, you know some probably, maybe you are one, they've been in business for 5, 10, 15 plus years. Good is good enough. They've developed these habits in their work where, okay, maybe they can pay their bills and they can meet payroll and they can meet the mortgage payment or the lease payment. And in some months it's tougher than others, and maybe some months they can't quite do it, or maybe they're late. But they've been able to sustain the business year after year, and it's just good enough. No, they're not comfortable. They're not living in the lap of luxury. They don't have that internet lifestyle that we all so crave. They just keep on keeping on, and it is their way of life. It has become their habit. I'm saddened by it. I'm really saddened by it. A few months ago, I began to do, and don't get me wrong, this was not anywhere near like an MIT or a Carnegie Mellon research project, but I just began to make some observations and to think about the people that are in my life that I'm working with and trying to help, and looking at the internet at what I could observe in others. And it seems to me there's a lot of folks in that boat. There's a lot of people who are in the boat where they've had an ongoing business And I'm finding out that an awful lot of these people, even if they've had a business for some period of time, just feel like failures. Failures because they're just not able to break through. And here's a big reason why many of them feel like failures. They're judging themselves based on what other people are doing. It's the curse of the comparison. And it is a curse. And we all do it. I'm the father of a daughter, and I'm now the grandfather of a granddaughter. And I've been mindful for a long time about especially how little girls and even big girls can judge themselves and compare themselves by what the mass media portrays as beauty or fitness. Now, I don't know that firsthand because I'm not a young lady. I'm not even an old lady, but that art of comparison or that curse of comparison takes a heavy, heavy toll. You see countless news stories every year of young ladies who are, you know, suffer eating disorders and various other maladies because of this whole thing of trying to compare themselves to what they believe the standard for beauty is. Well, in business, we do the same thing. In business, we look at people who, by all appearances, they have achieved crazy, wild success, success that we wish we had, but we don't. And now we feel like, well, compared to them, we are a failure. There's a few problems with this, not the least of which is not everything is always as it appears. Take a small business owner who is languishing, but has been sustaining the business year after year, year after year, and maybe he's carrying $30,000 in debt, and he looks at the other fella who just seems to have it so great and wonderful, and the guy's got new cars all the time and living high. Here's what you don't know. He's got $3 million in debt. All that glitters is not gold. It's very dangerous. The curse of the comparison can really put us in a mental funk that can absolutely sabotage our success. But I want to challenge you that that kind of good is not good enough. Because there's a lot of business owners who are standing on the bottom of the ocean. Their head is so far under the water. And I don't mean financially, but in many cases psychologically, emotionally. And they're just stuck. They have no idea what it would be like to be up on top, where the skies are clear and blue, where the air is fresh and you can breathe, and where you don't feel like you've got, you know, 400-pound weights draped around your shoulders. Don't know what that feels like. They have no idea what that feels like. But they're very talented at lamenting the fact that that ain't where they're at, but they see other people that they perceive are there. Now, what can we do about this? Well, I think I've just told you the first place to start, and it's, I hate to tell you, but it's the best I can do. It's just the best I can do today, and that is quit living under the curse of the comparison. Stop looking at what other people are doing, because here's the practical reality, and you know this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Question: the other guy's success or failure, either one, how does that impact you? Unless you let it. Well, it doesn't impact you. Whether the other guy's knocking the cover off the ball doesn't mean diddly squat to you. Whether the other guy is fixing to file bankruptcy and lose everything he owns doesn't mean diddly squat to you. You've got to take care of business. I regularly encounter solopreneurs and small business owners who are stuck in a way of doing business because it has always worked good enough for them. And I'm not throwing rocks, but in all honesty, what I've discovered, and I discovered it years ago, they don't know any better. They just do what works. Now, the most hard-headed of them, they will continue to do what works, and they will argue, and they will carry on and tell you, well, this has always worked. Well, the fact is it ain't working so well, but that's fine. You know, not every patient wants to be saved. Not every patient wants any help. Not every addict appreciates the intervention. Some do. I would say many do. I haven't had too many business owners over the course of my career who haven't, after some discussion, and I need to qualify it by that, because there does have to be some discussion. This isn't one of those just hit somebody in the forehead with it and have them make an adjustment. But when you talk it out, and when people start taking a very serious look at their situation, and you start, you bring some outside analysis, and you don't bring the emotion with you, which is easy for me to do, because if I'm helping somebody, it's not my business. It's their business. But I care about it. Do I care as much as they do? Well, I can care as much as they do, but I don't care the same. It's just not the same. There's a big benefit in that. The benefit is, well, I can give you lots of illustrations, but the easiest is when it comes to people. I've worked with small business owners who have had people working for them for years that frankly should not have been there for any length of time, much less years. People who were insubordinate, people whose work was inferior, and try as you might and say, well, yes, it was your fault. You should have done something about this years ago, but now here's where you're at. So what are you going to do? Those kinds of things are very easy for most small business owners to see once they've got a voice of reason in front of them who's showing them the practical realities of the situation and the heavy toll that this is taking. The problem is they've got all this guilt because, yeah, they know they should have handled it 10 years ago, but they didn't. And now here they are. And it's, you know, it's just like a never-ending bad date. I just can't end it. And sometimes it does take an outside person to come in and slap us into reality. But when we've got it in our head that this is how life is, because this is how life has always been, that's the disturbing thing for me. When a business owner finds themselves having succeeded to some degree, but they can't get to the next level, whatever that may be, and they can't get there because here's the message that they say to themselves, and here's what they say to me. I can't get there from here. It's never going to happen. Or it's never going to be any different. Or next week is just going to be the same thing. And your heart just sinks, because if a guy like me, who's frankly is fairly optimistic, you know, I look at people and I say, you know, if that's how you believe it's going to be, you're exactly right. The problem is it doesn't have to be that way. And I'm not talking law of attraction and all that. And if you're into that, well, whoop-de-doo for you. But I don't buy it. I don't buy it. We got to put in work. And I know people that are putting in tons of work, hard work, and it's not hard work and hustle that makes it. If hard work and hustle made it, then I could line up millions of blue-collar workers who are working for a wage and just barely making ends meet, but they work harder than probably any of us listening to this podcast or those of us recording this podcast. So it ain't hard work. And there are a lot of people that are working hard and making big money, and a lot of people that aren't working hard at all and making bigger money. But it does take work. You know, I constantly argue with, well, I don't argue, but I put forth the argument. It's a better way to say it. I put forth the argument pretty well. I do it. There probably isn't a day go by, let's put it that way, that I don't make the argument. The work that you're putting in right now is sufficient. you're working hard enough, you're putting in enough hours, you're putting in enough effort for it to be different. But it's a little bit like those squared corners and those rounded corners. Where are you putting your effort? It's a little bit like those wires in that turntable arm. How much difference is it really going to make? And what I constantly encounter are business owners who are spending a ton of time on things that even if the design guy gets rounded corners on every conceivable corner, what difference is it going to make? And the answer is, it's not going to make a bit of difference. Not one little bit of difference, except in his head. But there you go. That's where we live our lives. We live so much of our lives in our head, and we conjure up all these monsters, and we conjure up all these ideas, and we imagine that that'll fix it. Rounded corners. But of course, that will fix it. Don't be satisfied with good being good enough. What was good enough for you to keep your doors open is not good enough for you to be as successful as you can be. And lose the curse of the comparison. You doing your best, you being your most effective, you being your most efficient, that's all that matters. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is Bula, B-U-L-A, network.com. And eventually, I'll get back inside the Yellow Studio.